We are joined right now by a Washington Post national NBA writer, author of the Washington Post's NBA Post Up Weekly Newsletter, host of Greatest of All Talk, an NBA show, author of Bubble Ball. He is Ben Golliver. Ben, it's so good to have you back. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Just here in the Bay Area, you know, getting ready for Game 5, seeing if the Warriors can close things out. So I'm feeling good. How are you?
I'm great. I am great. I know you are there. I was going to mention that fact itself. I know you're there for Game 5. Before we talk about that, Ben, can you help me with the Eastern Conference Finals and how ugly they've been? The hell is going on here?
Well, you had a bunch of teams coming into the playoffs that were all pretty similar in terms of talent, in terms of record, and just in terms of profile. You had a lot of really good defensive teams and some teams that maybe had some struggle, you know, scoring on offense. And I think over the first couple of rounds of these playoffs, it was just a war of attrition. You know, Chris Middleton goes down. Boston has a whole bunch of injuries. Miami has a bunch of injuries. And they don't have one of their main guys, Tyler Hero, in terms of the scoring. And I think you just get, you know, closer and closer to the finish line, and guys are running out of gas. And you look at this conference final schedule, there were no days off whatsoever. You know, it was just basically game, day off, game. There was never a real break for these guys. And so to me, you're seeing the fatigue shine through. You're seeing some of the injuries shine through as well. And ultimately, I think Boston's going to be the last team standing in the East because they're deeper and because they've been, you know, probably the steadiest team we've seen out of that conference. But it's been a real, you know, it's been a real rock fight, even going back to their second round series against Milwaukee. And they're getting it done with defense. They should be really proud, actually, of how they bounced back from being 2-1 in that series, down 2-1, I should say, with two pretty impressive victories.
Ben Golliver is joining us. Ben, one more thought on that. Just kind of a quick follow-up. I mean, I don't want to say it's one and the same, but the NHL does play a similar schedule. They play every other night. It doesn't seem like they're having the kind of injury problems or issues or non-competitive games that we're seeing in the NBA right now. In this era of load management especially, does this seem unusual to you at all?
Well, we got one thing, you know, we went back to an 82-game schedule this year for the first time in a couple of years because of the pandemic, right? And so this season has just felt like it's been going on forever. I think that's one issue. The other issue is there's so much three-point shooting and so much spacing in the NBA right now, and a lot of these teams are playing pretty fast. If you're playing hard on defense, you're moving a lot. You're just, you know, wearing yourself down and setting yourself up for the potential of injuries as you're accumulating all of these, you know, all these games over the course of 6 or 7 months. So, you know, I don't know exactly what to attribute it to, but I do think style of play is coming into it. These guys just have to work really, really hard. And when you're watching these games up close, it's amazing how much ground they're covering on the defensive end these days. You know, if you're a big center, you know, you're kind of flat-footed, you don't move very well, you stand no chance in the NBA playoffs, and you still could have probably gotten away playing, you know, say 5 years ago. The style of play has just changed that much, and so I think that all that movement, all that speed, you know, and also the physicality ramps up in the postseason too. I think that's just kind of the cocktail for injuries to take place. Weird. I mean, you're just seeing a lot of wear-down injuries like hamstrings, right? Anytime you have that, you know it's just guys working too hard.
We're talking to Ben Golliver. You know, Ben, what's really interesting is you say all those things. I agree with you. And then you look at Steph Curry, and it's amazing. The transformation of him physically is just an amazing thing to see. Earlier in this series, for instance, Jason Kidd said, quote, "Steph is the best conditioned athlete in this game. He never stops moving," end of quote. Like, if we were to go back to the beginning of his career and all the concerns about his ankles, how remarkable is it that we're at this point where his peers are breaking down all around him and he's still in elite condition?
Well, that's amazing, but the second amazing part is this guy was injured 2 months ago. I mean, he had a foot sprain. Remember, Marcus Smart kind of fell on him weird?
Right.
And, you know, I wrote a story at the time. I said, this is the worst possible timing for the Golden State Warriors. This could throw off their entire title push, but that's not what happened at all. Steph Curry somehow got the miracle cure. You know, he comes back in the playoffs. He's coming off the bench for the first four games. Let me ask you, Jim, how many superstar A-list, you know, first ballot Hall of Famers are going to come off the bench for four straight games like Steph Curry did in the playoffs? You're never going to see that. And him doing that really set up Jordan Poole to keep his momentum going in that first-round series. And I also think it helped Steph Curry kind of get himself into a rhythm in these playoffs, right? But, no, it's been crazy. I mean, just go right down the list of guys who have been Steph Curry's playoff rivals in the past, right? Kawhi Leonard didn't play a single game this year because of injury. LeBron and Russell Westbrook were out before the play-in tournament. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving didn't win a single playoff game. They were swept in the first round. James Harden and Chris Paul, both those guys went home in the second round. with the 76ers and the Phoenix Suns. I mean, Steph Curry's like the only guy from his generation really who's left standing in this postseason, and he's actually taking care of business against the next generation. I mean, you look at how he played against John Morant, how he played against Luka Doncic. It's absolutely remarkable. And Golden State's sitting right now on the brink of making their sixth final in the last 8 years. The last team to do that was MJ's Bulls. We just don't see stuff like that. And Steph Curry's longevity is right in the middle of it.
Ben Culver is joining us. It's so well said, Ben. So let's finish that thought. Like, for instance, legacy talk can get pretty tedious. But if Steph were to win a fourth NBA title this year, what would that mean for him?
Well, the first thing it does is it puts him on level with LeBron James, right? And so when you're saying who's the best player from this generation, I would still lean LeBron because, you know, from the, you know, a pure accumulation standpoint and a consistency standpoint, not very many people, compare with him. But I do think it kind of puts the Warriors as the defining team of the 21st century, sort of that, that post-Jordan era. I mean, you've got a lot of titles with Kobe's Lakers. They're probably in the mix as well. But Golden State getting four, it's a big deal, and it gives them a leg up, no question. It also, though, helps Steph Curry win the divorce with Kevin Durant, doesn't it? If he gets a title this year, that means he had one before KD showed up, two with KD, and then one after KD left. I mean, that's kind of the ultimate trump card in that kind of conversation as well. So those are a few of the things that Steph Curry's playing for. On top of that, he could get his first finals MVP. You know, he never won one during their earlier years. I think that's always been something kind of a sore spot for his fans. Just kind of an empty box to check on his list, and he can knock that off. He could also become the first guy to win the Western Conference Finals MVP, and that's named after Magic Johnson. And look, Jim, if he does all of this, if they win the title, if he's Finals MVP, he's Western Conference Finals MVP, I think you're going to hear people ramping up the who's the best point guard of all time debates. Is it Magic or is it Steph? I'd still go Magic, but that conversation gets a lot more interesting if he gets this thing done.
Ben Culver is joining us. Ben, let me jump ahead to something totally off the board. Not off the board, but off of the playoffs. I had Magic head coach Jamal Mosley on the program the morning after they won the draft lottery. You wrote about this in your newsletter. What does that win mean for that franchise? And then how do you see them approaching it?
Well, Jim, I want to tell you a story. So the guy who was in the little dungeon where they actually do the lottery drawing was named Joel Glass. He's been their PR guy since 1995, right? And this is a team that basically hasn't won a playoff series since Dwight Howard left. They were an expansion franchise, you know, that started not too long before he got there. So can you imagine his joy in being a PR guy for almost 30 years for an organization that, made the finals with Dwight, but had some real up and down moments? When you're the guy who's in that lottery drawing room and the ping pong balls come up your way, and he actually brought lucky ping pong balls from the Shaq lottery, from the Chris Webber lottery, and from the Dwight Howard lottery to kind of give him good luck for this one. And now you've got the chance after what's been a really tough stretch of years for the Magic where they go into full rebuild mode at last year's trade deadline. They just trade everybody away. It's like a full garage sale, right? And they come home with the opportunity to draft Jabari Smith, out of Auburn, or Chet Holmgren out of Gonzaga. I mean, guys who are really going to, potentially be franchise changers. You can just imagine the joy and the excitement on their faces. Jamal Mosley was there happy. Their front office was there happy as well. But they have to get this right, Jim. I mean, they've had a really tough stretch, like I've described. This is the biggest decision of their entire decade. They can't whiff. You know, they got to get this one right and add to kind of a young core and build going forward. They had the youngest starting lineup in the league last year. That's why they could barely win 20 games. And they're going to need to use this pick as kind of a springboard, get themselves back towards some relevance.
All right, so really quickly, Ben, to that point, what is your sense, for instance, as to how NBA teams view Chet Holmgren? How concerned would they be about his size and how he would fare against bigger, stronger centers?
Well, from the people I talk to, there's a lot of people licking their lips at Chet. I mean, I understand there's questions about his body, there's no doubt, but I think there's also a lot of excitement about his skill set. I mean, you look at, he almost averaged 4 blocks per game in college. He's swatting everything. He's super long, but it's also the personality. It's the unselfishness. It's the team-first makeup. It's the fact that he wants to win. He chose to go to Gonzaga because that's like a basketball-only program, right? You go out to Spokane to hoop and do nothing else. And I think that's sort of his mentality. If I'm the Thunder sitting at number 2 and I'm trying to kind of build an NBA team that's sort of like a college program, and that's how they approach it. They want everybody all in together. It's really about youth and development there. I think he would be a perfect pick for the Oklahoma City Thunder at number two. And, you know, you're going to have to build up his strength. He's admitted that. He's acknowledged that. I mean, there's not very many guys who are 7 feet tall and under 200 pounds in the NBA, and he would join that group. And certainly there's no stars who are built like that. So you're entering uncharted waters if you draft Chet Holmgren. But I also think the teams at the top of the lottery are going to be in position to take this slow, to be patient. Orlando just started their rebuild movement. Oklahoma City has just started its rebuilding movement. Those teams want to get a guy who they can build around for the next 7, 8, 9, 10 years. They're not looking for a quick fix. And I think Chet can be that guy. I'm pretty high on him. I think he can be an all-star player, a defensive player of the year type. He just moves so well, and he's so long. He can shoot the ball. He can handle it a little bit off the dribble. He can finish lobs. And the personality stuff, I mean, he's about all the right stuff from a character standpoint.
And he is unbelievably skilled. Washington Post national NBA writer, also the author of the Washington Post NBA Post-Up Weekly Newsletter, something you should see and get. Host of Greatest of All Talk, an NBA show, and the author of Bubble Ball. Good friend of the program. He is Ben Golliver. Ben, thank you very much. Have a great game tonight. I know you and I will do it again soon.
Sounds great, Jim. Take care, man.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. Be good.